This is our number 10.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes of the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
It's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. I'm trying to calm down a little bit, but I'm amazed. Some of the comments on My Northwest, some of the text messages that I'm getting, I'm amazed at how so many people don't get what's happening around here. If you're just joining us, so I, this morning, went for a bike ride out in Kenmore, and there were four King County Department of Natural Resource trucks with lawnmowers and weed eaters next to the Burke-Gilman Trail. Four workers who weren't working. They were just standing around. And it specifically says in Jay Inslee's Guideline for Essential Businesses, under maintenance, I'll read it to you. Outdoor maintenance, including vegetation, is deemed essential only when necessary to prevent spoliation, avoid imminent damage, or address emergency repairs. Weed whacking is not that. So my question is, why should government not have to shrink at all? Because it's my view that if the, you know, GDP of our local economy, if it shrinks 30%, and I'm just picking that number out of the air, but if it shrinks 30%, then government should shrink 30%. We don't need government anywhere near the level. You know, it's like the accused child molester mayor who added 3,000 employees, went from 10,000 to 13,000 City of Seattle employees. And the reason why this is so important is because we've got a lot of socialists, declared socialists. The majority of the Seattle City Council is socialists. I have no doubt that Dow Constantine is a socialist. None whatsoever. And, I mean, just his actions are to me, proof of that. And if the private economy around here shrinks 30% and government doesn't shrink at all, then the proportional share of what is government becomes much greater. And when you look at countries like France, which is an absolute failure economically, that's because one out of every four employees, every four workers in France works for the government. And government doesn't produce anything. And I'm not saying that apathetically. It's not a negative, it's just a reality. Government doesn't add value. Government does jobs where there's no profit motive. We need cops. We need firefighters. We need road maintenance. We don't need weed whacking by the Burke-Gilman when everybody else is out of work. But the reason I'm so infuriated about this is because what I saw this morning is a microcosm of a huge issue. And that is this growing desire among all our local politicians to turn us into the socialist corner of the United States. And I hate socialism. Socialism is for losers. And so that's why I get so upset. That's why I call this stuff out. It's not fair that hardworking business people and workers are going without a paycheck and our government will not shrink at all, that Sound Transit's still building out. It's not fair. I thought if anything, the left was always screaming about fairness and equity. Government has become royalty around here. And we can't keep going down this path where we just get taxed more and more a percentage of our income to give to crap like I saw this morning. If you want to see the story, it's up at mynorthwest.com. We got it up there right on the main page. So, Nicole, I know that you have to keep track of all the press conferences that usually land during our show. Is the White House Coronavirus Task Force briefing at 2 o'clock today?
Well, they have been. I actually haven't seen this one pushed out by them yet, but that's been their routine. Okay. But then normally they don't actually start until 2:30 or 3, so.
Well, usually put by 2:30. Yesterday was about 2:15, I think.
Right.
Okay, but then there's a dueling press conference today?
Of course. You know he does it on purpose.
So Jay Inslee has scheduled his press conference today for the exact same time as the White House? If the White House is on the same timetable?
Correct.
Okay. I'm sorry. That's that's just a real punk move by Jay Inslee. So these White House coronavirus task force briefings are getting monstrous ratings. And I will say, yesterday's was by far, the most informative. It was also, at the same time, somewhat optimistic and very, very ominous. And I found it to be riveting. And I was thrilled that we brought it to you. And I mean, that's what tears me apart as the gatekeeper when Inslee pulls his punk move and says, I'll do my press conference at the same time as Donald Trump's. Because we're a local Seattle, Western Washington radio station. And it's always, always, always been my core fundamental belief that we prioritize local. And, you know, it's everything about me and this radio show about prioritizing local says we got to carry the Inslee, even though I think that his press conferences are boring. They're far less informative. But I'm still going to prioritize Jay Inslee if they go head-to-head at 2 o'clock. But what a punk move by Inslee to schedule it at the same time as the White House when the whole nation has been just dialed in to the White House. Jay Inslee, I wanted that job. I'm going to do mine at the same time. Oh, good. Cool, Jay. That'll teach him. As I said, yesterday's White House briefing, it was weird because even Jim Acosta, who's been dueling with Trump for years now, Jim Acosta said that Trump seems like a different person. He's a changed guy, that he was took a much better tone. And when even Jim Acosta is saying that, it's shocking. But I agree. And look, Trump is always about, Trump and how great a job he was doing with the economy and how great a job he's doing with COVID-19. And he's said many, many things that have been proven incorrect the last few weeks. But I think he's getting it, and I'll tell you why. Doctors Fauci and Birx, they are superstars. They are so brilliant, and as brilliant as they are, they know exactly how to communicate in an understandable way to the entire country. So if you missed it, and as a preview of what's coming up about an hour from now from both Inslee and Trump, Trump talked about, and maybe this is why he had sounded like he had a different tone. He talked about a personal friend of his who has COVID-19.
But think of what would have happened if we didn't do anything. I mean, I've had many friends, business people with great, actually, common sense. They said, why don't we write it out? A lot of people have said, a lot of people have thought about it. Write it out. Don't do anything. Just write it out and think of it as the flu. But it's not the flu. It's vicious. When you send.
Okay, and I'll pause for just a second because, a few months ago or a couple months ago, several weeks ago, Trump said it is the flu. And so he was wrong. He was wrong about that. And so some people were picking that apart, that he said this isn't the flu. It's not. But I think he's getting it because he's surrounded by such brilliant people.
A friend to the hospital and you call up to find out how is he doing. It happened to me where goes to the hospital. He says goodbye. He's sort of a tough guy, a little older, a little heavier than he'd like to be, frankly. And you call up the next day, how's he doing? And he's in a coma. This is not the flu. So we would have seen things had we done nothing. But for a long while, a lot of people were asking that question, I think, right? I was asking it also. I mean, a lot of people were saying, well, let's just ride it out. This is not to be ridden out, because then you would have been looking at potentially 2.2 million people or more. 2.2 million people in a relatively short period of time.
And then, as I said, it got ominous because you could tell the somberness in Trump's voice when he talked about what is ahead for you, for me, for America in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
I want every American to be prepared for the hard days that lie ahead. We're going to go through a very tough 2 weeks. And then hopefully, as the experts are predicting, as I think a lot of us are predicting after having studied it so hard, you're going to start seeing some real light at the end of the tunnel. But this is going to be a very painful, very, very painful 2 weeks.
And they brought out the charts. You know, we have about 4,000 dead in America now. They expect at minimum 100,000 dead. And the graph takes off now. And in about 2 weeks, it peaks, and then it starts sloping down again. But that means for the, you know, next 3-4 weeks, we are going to see, and I mean, yesterday, Trump talked about the hospital in Queens, where they had freezer truck trailers to hold bodies outside of the hospital. I mean, what's going on in New York right now is, it's just unimaginable. And the hospitals are getting overrun, and they're stacking bodies in freezer trucks to, you know, whenever they can have funerals again. And the president did say, but it should get better after it does get worse.
And this is going to be a rough 2 week period. As a nation, we face a difficult few weeks as we approach that really important day when we're going to see things get better all of a sudden. And it's going to be like a burst of light, I really think, and I hope. Our strength will be tested and our endurance will be tried. But America will answer with love and courage and ironclad resolve. This is the time for all Americans to come together and do our part.
And then he turned it over to the doctors. And this is why I feel so encouraged, optimistic about where we are headed. Dr. Birx, first of all, talked about Washington State and how our slope is much more shallow than what they're seeing in many other parts of the country.
The yellow line is Washington. We all remember Washington State. It was just a month ago when they started to have the issues in Washington State, but they brought together their communities and their health providers, and they put in strong mitigation methods and testing. And you can see what the result in Washington State and California is. But without the continuation for the next 30 days, anything could change.
So we've done a good job here. And that's why I've been supportive of the mitigation of the, you know, and I'll give credit to Jay Inslee. He very early on closed down restaurants and bars. And I think that was an important step. The stay at home is, I think, necessary from what I'm hearing from these geniuses, the Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx. But all I'm saying is just play by the same set of rules that you're imposing on us. There's no way you can tell us to stay at home and to lose our jobs when you're rolling out weed eaters on Burke Gilman. Just have government play by the same rules. And then at the briefing yesterday, Dr. Fauci stepped up and he talked about, well, if we had done no mitigation in America.
The virus, if left to its own devices, will do that dark curve that Dr. Birx showed you. The other dynamic force is what we are doing, what we're trying to do, and what we will do in the form of mitigation.
And that's where, if you are out of work, if you've been furloughed, you've been laid off, You have to want to believe that the sacrifice is for something. And, you know, he was talking about it. We might have 1 to 200,000 die, but if we hadn't done anything, it could have been 2 million. And Dr. Fauci, man, he's the real
thing. The reason why we feel so strongly about the necessity of the additional 30 days is that now is the time, whenever you're having an effect, not to take your foot off the accelerator and on the brake, but to just press it down on the accelerator. And that's what I hope and I know that we can do over the next 30 days.
And he says the hardship, the collective sacrifice is making a difference.
And as I said the other day and on one of the interviews, we are a very strong and resilient nation. If you look at our history, we've been through some terrible ordeals. This is tough. People are suffering. People are dying. It's inconvenient from a societal standpoint, from an economic standpoint, to go through this. But this is going to be the answer to our problems. So let's all pull together and make sure, as we look forward to the next 30 days, we do it with all the intensity and force that we can.
Oh, Lord, let me be that sharp of mind when I'm 79 years old. When I watch this guy, he's like a man 30, 40 years younger. You know, Harvard trained, genius, communicator, just unbelievable. Okay, so then they turned it over to the White House press corps. And I'm sorry, I don't know if I've ever heard such a group of morons in my life. So if the graph is ascending and it's going to peak in about 2 or 3 weeks, and then it's going to descend for 2 or 3 weeks, and we're going to have horrible deaths in America over those 3 or 4 weeks and into May. Listen to this one question from one of the White House press corps.
I can't see the small characters, but are we seeing death until June? I can't really...
This is June.
So we would still see problems and deaths in June.
No. It's a projection,
of course.
So, I mean, just getting back to what I said about the stepwise thing, deaths always lag. So you will be seeing deaths at a time when, as an epidemic, we're doing really, really well. Because the deaths will lag.
What, the guy who asked that question, what's he thinking? Because they have the graph, and it comes down steep, and it starts to level off in May, and then we're going to have, you know, just a relatively tiny number in late May and into June and July. But did this guy think that we're going to just have this for 2 weeks, and then God flips a switch, no more COVID-19, and death stop? Of course we're going to have some into June. But he was, I'm looking at the grant, are we going to have deaths into June? Oh, what a genius question. And on it came from the press.
Dr. Fauci, should Americans be prepared for the likelihood that there will be 100,000 Americans who die from this virus?
The answer is yes. We need, as sobering a number as that is, we should be prepared for it. Is it going to be that much? I hope not. And I think the more we push on the mitigation, the less likelihood it would be that number. But as being realistic, we need to prepare ourselves that that is a possibility, that that's what we will see.
Very, very sobering and heartbreaking. We've never seen anything like this. We are going through together something that we have never experienced in our lifetime and hopefully never will again. As I said, I thought that White House briefing yesterday was incredibly informative, and Drs. Birx and Fauci, I could listen to them all day. I'm very, very sorry that our governor is so petty that he has scheduled his briefing today for the exact same time as the White House, because I would much rather listen to the White House personally. But as Western Washington's radio station, we're going to prioritize Jay Inslee. Hopefully one of them will run late. We'll be able to get you most of both of them. But I'm very disappointed. I think the governor is way too petty by scheduling his at the same time as the White House. It's a very petty move by the governor. We would love to bring you both. We would love to hear from Jay Inslee and from the task force. I think that that would be best for the citizens. Jay Inslee wants to overwhelm the other, apparently. All right, there you have it. That is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast Stories, Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Hey, it's Wednesday. That's when Brock Heward usually pops in for a visit. Talk with him coming up next.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-woo!
It's hump day with Heward.
Ooh, and it check. Brown, 24, razor.
Brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Where the 12s hear the Hawks.
Play fake to Penny Russell, lets it go. Down the far sideline, reaching up, making the catch. Touchdown, Seahawks!
Here's Dory Monson.
Well, it is Wednesday afternoon, and that means it is time for a weekly visit with our friend Brock Heward from, like all of us, parts unknown. I usually say Fox Sports. Who knows what's going on these days, man? How are you and the family holding up? We talked last week about all of you being together in the same house, and you were loving it. I'm loving it. Are you still holding up a week later?
Loving it. Yeah, loving it, man. The dishwasher's not loving it. I think the dishwasher's gotten more activity in 3 weeks than it did in the last, like, 3 months. The laundry machine, the washer and dryer have been busy with sweaty workout clothes. And I think those two things are probably the only things in the house that have not really enjoyed having everybody home, because the rest of us even gotten a little routine with some homeschooling. Yeah. I'm catching up on my fractions and decimals, Dory. Teaching Titus his fourth grade math. So, yeah, I feel like it's kind of recharged my brain. What's that?
Give me a quick math problem, just real quick, so I can keep my brain shut.
He just took a test. It was, how many centimeters are there in 8.6 kilometers?
Holy moly. Well, there would be 100 centimeters in a meter times 1,000 would be 100,000 in a kilometer, 8.6. I would say 800,600?
860,000?
860,000.
You had it right.
860,000.
Yeah. There you go. Yes.
I didn't want to waste everybody's time.
You nailed it.
Okay. Since you mentioned the dishwasher, but you have the same number of people in your house. We have many more people at our house right now. And here's what I'm discovering, Brock. There's only one bathroom in the house that has a bathtub, and that's the master bath, of course, because mommy and daddy, we wanted that for us.
Yeah.
Every afternoon, about 5:30, I hear the bath running in our master.
Okay.
And it's like my wife said, our hot water heater's just strained to the max. It's just every night somebody's taking a bath. Nobody's taken a bath in this house for months. And now it's a nightly thing.
Are they rotating through? Like, okay, I got the bath from 5 to 6. You get it 6 to 7. You get it 7 to 8.
It's horrible. Okay, we have got a lot of stuff to talk about here, and one of them's a real somber one, Brock, because one of the all-time legendary Huskies, Jim Lambright, passed away a few days ago, and this is a guy who I got to know a little bit, and he was always so good to me, but I certainly didn't know him the way that you did.
Yeah, he is a special Husky, Dory. And, you know, Joe DiMaggio's hit record, I don't know if you and I will ever see it broken in our lifetimes. What was that, 55 straight games that the Joe
56.
D had a, what's that? 56 straight games. There you go. I robbed him of one. I don't think Jim Lambright's record of number of games played as a player, as a coach, and then as the head coach will ever be touched, maybe at any, certainly at any Power Five university, Division One major, you know, university, maybe some of the smaller schools, like a Frosty Westring had a decades and decades and decades long run. But I'm talking about as a player, then as an assistant, then as a coordinator, and then as a head coach. I mean, he had over 350 games under his belt as a Husky. There was no more guy that I have ever come across, no more alum that ever bled purple and gold more. There are a bunch that bleed it, but none more than Jim Lambright. And Dory, I don't think because of the state of college athletics today, I don't think that record will ever be touched. It's quite a testament to his longevity and his passion for this place.
I never thought about that. Do you know that he has more games than anybody?
Yeah, that was out earlier this week, and I think it's somewhat hard to compare and contrast, that. You know. But yes, I mean, he played in the 60s. He was there as an assistant all the way through into the 90s, and then ultimately as the head coach as well. I think it was something like 380-some games. I don't have the number right in front of me, Dory. But it was north of 350 by a bunch. And I, again, for the state of today's big time athletics and big time sports, let alone to play at a school and to be an alum and then ultimately an assistant and a head coach, there are guys that have done it. And there's actually a lot of them. Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern's a guy that has been there since he was a player in the 90s. But you're talking of him having to weather and survive a couple more decades. Just hard to fathom anybody will be able to touch that record and that love for this place that Jim had.
And you know what? I'm really sorry. I should have known this and looked it up before we talked today. But what was Lambo doing when you played there?
He was the head coach for all
4 years.
He was your
head coach.
Yeah,
okay.
He was my head coach.
I thought he was. I wasn't positive. Okay. So he had taken, which was just an impossible situation because Don James was such a legend. And for him to have to, you never want to replace a legend. And that's why I feel so bad for Paul Gallant having to replace you.
True.
On 710 ESPN. Yeah. But you never want to replace a legend. And he, not only he did that, but he continued the toughness that was so emblematic of him.
And I would have to add to that, Dory, you never want to do that in those circumstances, even if they were clean. He then inherited a program with a bowl ban. The two recruiting classes that preceded me at the University of Washington were both limited, only 15 scholarships, and that really took a toll. I mean, those were factors totally outside of some of his control, and yet he said, that's all right, you know, I'll inherit it. You know, that word tough. If he said it once, he said it 500,000 times in my 4 years there at the University of Washington. That's what he was all about. That's what the program was about. And even though some of those circumstances he inherited weren't the greatest, you know, he pushed through those and had a whole bunch of wins over those 4 years and I think 6 or 7 years as a head coach in total.
Yeah, pretty cool legacy. Pretty cool. One other thing I want to talk to you about. Your counterpart at ESPN, Kirk Herbstreit, number one college football analyst there. He said a few days ago that he does not expect there will be NFL or NCAA football this fall because of this virus outbreak. Are you hearing anything from the folks at Fox Sports? And what do you think about what Herbstreit said?
Yeah, the only thing I'm hearing is, in fact, I've had a few different conversations with executives at our place, and it was, please don't do that. You know, just please, seriously, and just what good is that going to do? You know, and I retweeted Jeff Van Gundy the other day, the NBA analyst at ESPN, who said similar things, said, we're not going to have the NBA. We're not going to have baseball. Football is probably going to be pushed back if we have it at all. And I just, you know, I retweeted that and said, are you an expert? I mean, you're an MBA coach and analyst. That's what you are. You're not an epidemiologist. You're not a virologist. You're not a doctor. You're not a scientist. You know, that's one of the things that I'm having a hard time with is all the people that think by reading all the data and staying up into the wee hours of the morning that they somehow, you know the calculation and they know the numbers and they know where this is going. Nobody does. Nobody does. The experts don't. So, yeah, that's the only thing we've been advised is let's be very careful about, you know, putting start dates or end dates on any of the unknowns, especially when the experts can't even do that.
Well, and just to echo what you're saying, I think as a news consumer, it makes a real easy filter. If you are reading or watching or listening to somebody who states definitively that they know how this is going to play out, remove them from your news list because none of us know how this is going to play out. So it'll be, but man, I'd love some distractions again sometime soon.
Yeah.
Just, I'd love some college football just so I could drown out the bathwater running.
That's
all I'm looking for. Yeah. All right. Take care, Brock. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's always fun to join you. Have a little normalcy in these abnormal times. Thanks, Dory.
Yes, sir. All right. Brock Heward, Fox Sports, 710 ESPN Seattle, and joins us every Wednesday. All right. We got lots more. Straight ahead, it's the Dory Monson Show. Rolls on.
Rolls on.
Hey, did I step on your toes there? Oh, there you go. Rolls on.
Rolls on. Rolls on.
Rolls on. Expecting in 9 minutes, dueling press conferences. Jay Inslee will talk about extending the stay-at-home order in Washington. Donald Trump and the Coronavirus Task Force, they will have their daily briefing at 2 o'clock. I am hopeful that one is running late so we can bring them to you concurrently. And again, Governor, stop scheduling your press conference at the same time as the White House. It's really, really, really bad look. You know, as we've been watching, first of all these cable news people who are broadcasting from home, Chris Cuomo has the COVID-19, but he's still doing his show from his basement. Every one of these celebrities that I'm seeing from home, they have kind of modest looking places. I thought they'd be a little nicer. It's like when they had that concert, that pathetic concert on Sunday night, hosted by Elton John, but he didn't sing. And you're looking at all these celebrities who recorded songs at home, and I thought, really? I thought they'd have a bit of a mansion, but no, they looked pretty modest. Anyway,
I think Cuomo's is by design, don't you?
Yeah, he's trying to look humble. Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, he's in his basement.
Look up what his net worth is while I play Conan O'Brien.
Okay.
Conan O'Brien, this is awesome. Conan had a message to all the celebrities, you know, who are singing Imagine and doing all these things to help America. And all it is this self-serving, you know, glory unto me. I liked what Conan O'Brien had to say to the celebrities.
Now it's time for me to speak directly to celebrities. I have a message for them. Hear me out. Hey, let's face it. There's a lot of anger out there at this moment towards celebrities. Why celebrities are posting videos from their homes. And a lot of them have very beautiful, spacious mansions. And they look out of touch, telling us, hey, chill, it's all going to be okay. And then you see how they live, and it's just insane. I just want to tell all my celebrity friends, be careful about that, okay? Try and just be sensible about what you show in your home. I don't worry about that. I have a simple home, a nice home, but a simple home. And I'm proud of it, but nothing too opulent.
So he wasn't being funny. He was just telling them, knock it off. Hey, and by the way, before we get to the top of the hour here, Chris Cuomo's net worth is $12 million.
Right.
$12 million. Okay, got it. Joe Biden, our words to live by. In Florida, they finally are doing stay at home, even though there were signs days, weeks ago that they maybe should have done it sooner. Joe, what do you think about Florida finally doing stay at home?
Do you think it's too late for Florida to take action?
No. Look, the only thing I know for sure is it's never too late to start, but it's always too late when you take your time. Look, faster is better than slower.
Yeah, he's going to lead us through a crisis. Okay, all right. I'll let people continue to believe that. Okay, the dueling press conferences, we got you covered as the Dory Monson Show continues.